So we were kind of curious, like, are people just only buying the cheapest option every single time? And they buy the cheapest option about 60% of the time.
Hey, Pronouncers, we know you love tech products, and we're here to share a really cool one that is kind of disrupting the space on the distribution side. So we're going to talk about DGI Apparel. We've got the co-founder on today, Ian, and he's going to talk about his past. He was, part of a screen printing shop before, has a 3-point record at MIT. I think, Stephen, you could probably, did you hold it? Basketball record?
I think you worked at Tesla, and I met Ian maybe 2 months ago from none other than Matt Marcotte, and what he's building in the space is rather interesting, and recently it has started to take the industry by storm. I think it's a super cool episode today because he's not a screen printer, he's not from our kind, but the way he thinks about business and scaling is unconventional, and we're going to talk a little bit about Y Combinator, the accelerator that he's in, where some of the biggest companies have come out of. So super cool conversation. Excited to watch them grow. We got some sponsors.
Quick commercial break. First up, Graphic Source. If you need a solution to improve efficiency and reduce costs in your art department, GraphX offers industry-leading outsourcing options for your shop. They plug and play into Printavo or any other shop management solutions. And, they handle a lot of your back office work, SEPs, digitizing, creative art, order management, all that good stuff. They've got over 30 years in the game. Hit them up, PrintavoPod24. That code will get you 50% off your first vector, SEP, or embroidery order.
We use the crap out of GraphX over the weekend. We got overloaded with SEPs and proofs and mockups, and I had to call in extra help. And so GraphX was able to put a team really quickly on us to get us all ready for the weekend to do a bunch of hot market printing. They were doing SEPs literally live while we were printing. It was awesome. So hit them up. Thanks so much, Nick Wood.
All right. Our guest today started cleaning screens, actually, back in high school. Not sure if he was using Easy Way, but if you're not, you shouldn't be spending hours cleaning screens, as that is a thing of the past. Easy Way screen printing and cleaning supplies have innovative formulas that are designed to work quickly and effectively. So you could spend less time cleaning and more time creating. Easy Way is passionate. Not only that, they've empowered a lot of printers of all skill levels and all shop sizes. And lastly, they've got a lot of really great resources and a great team to be able to help you. So they're a really great partner in your shop. Thanks, Easy Way.
Multicraft, if you go to your phone and type in multicraft_daddy, he's at 983 followers. We got to get him over 1,000. He will post some more terrible dad content if you can do that for him. But if you need ink supplies or a daddy, Multicraft screen printing and digital supplies for over 50 years has been providing you with top brands at competitive prices. You can mention the Printavo Pod and receive an extra 10% off your order, or you can actually shoot Dave a DM, and he's giving away a free case of PMI tape per episode to win. DM and follow Dave, subscribe to the podcast, and if you follow PMI tape as well, leave him a nice comment on this video. Dave's going to pick out a new customer to win each week. Thanks so much.
Supacolor. Speaking of Supacolor, was peeling some transfers for my wife this morning. Supacolor is the world's best heat transfer, made for screen printers by screen printers. They understand the pressures and expectations of running a screen printing business. They both have screen printing businesses on the side. So they're able to use their product and be able to keep iterating on it, which is really cool. But Supacolor helps you make it. That's why if you use the Printavo15 code, that will get you 15% off as a promo code. Supacolor.com. They've got Supa DTF now, so now their minimum quantities are down to one. All right, let's jump on into the episode. Did you know Ian was a basketball player in college?
MIT, Ivy League.
Not Ivy League, sadly.
You weren't Ivy Leaguer?
No, Ivy's like Harvard, Brown, Yale, those guys. So we're Division III. We're in the New MAC, is the New England Women's and Men's Athletic Conference, I think.
Gotcha. So that's like dope, not smart, but not legit.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of like Illinois.
I'll beat most people at the park, but I'm not like going to the league or anything. So that kind of gives you a sense.
Farrick, did you know Ian set the 3-point record at MIT? Is that still true, Ian, or did it get?
No, it's true. Yeah. And the guy that I beat out for it started like a billion-dollar company. And so like afterwards he texts me and he's like, hey, I just want to point out that I only had 3 healthy seasons. So technically, per season, I had more threes, but the numbers speak for themselves. So I still have the record.
Love the competitiveness.
How many threes did you make?
309, I think, something like that.
That's insane. That's like 1,000 points. How many points do you score in 4 years?
1,358, I think.
Okay. So you only took threes.
In high school, I wasn't a shooter at all. And then I just kind of became like a 3-point specialist once I got to college.
So what are the, this is random, this has nothing to do with industry stuff, but like, are there any interesting training techniques or things or data perspectives that, like, especially with the AI stuff that teams use now, or have you seen anything? Like, I gotta imagine they're using video analysis plus AI to, help teams shoot a better percentage.
Yeah, there's actually a super cool company called Second Spectrum, and they do like video footage analysis for almost all the NBA teams. And there's kind of like a pipeline of MIT basketball guys going to work there. But they'll do really, really cool, like detailed breakdowns. So you could say like, all right, Kyrie Irving, if he's going with his left hand and he does one dribble off of a pick and he's this far from the basket, he's shooting 60%. But if he goes right hand and he's this far, he's 45%. So if we're playing defense, we're going to force him to the right. Like it's really, really detailed and cool stuff. So we didn't have access to that, but yeah, that's what the NBA teams are getting now.
It's insane. That kid from Oakland during March Madness, the like guy that looked like
the accountant.
He should work at Enterprise Rent-A-Car. Yeah. During his season, he took 330. He made 335 shots. 327 of them were threes. So he only took threes. That's crazy.
I feel like as a defense, you got to be able to scout for that, right? Just like run him off the line and then he's not a threat anymore. But if you're that much of a sharpshooter, I guess there's nothing they can do.
Yeah. Bruce recently got into sports. So he's
sports
new.
Guys. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Go to a few games here and there.
You guys are in Chicago, right?
Yeah, Chicago and Los Angeles. Sorry, I was just cruising around the Second Spectrum website. This, Steven, I don't know if you've seen this, but like, just look at the screenshots of this website. And it's like a guy is kicking a soccer ball and it says the percentage that he's going to make it based on, I'm guessing, insane. Historical. Like they just ingested all of his past tape. Unbelievable. I mean, AI is so cool. It's like such a buzzword, but it's also so cool.
That's probably why we never went pro, is because we just didn't have this stuff. It's just so much easier now, someone that told me all this. Yeah. Psh.
Steven's probably the next Michael Jordan if you had this kind of analytics growing up, right?
Exactly. I had to play on, cement and stuff. Crazy. Anyways.
Yeah. Okay.
Ian, what do you got, Bruce?
Yeah. So Ian Hinckley, North Carolina, you majored in mechanical engineering and business, which I think, Steven was an engineering major as well. Went on to, play basketball, as we know, but back in high school, you were working in a screen printing shop, right?
I was. Yeah. Yeah. And it was actually, my 8th grade social studies teacher, the year I got to high school, he, I guess, left teaching. He was like hit his pension, was kind of done with it. And so he wanted to buy a small business, and I was running the student section for like the football games in my high school. And we had to do like an order of like a couple hundred t-shirts. So I just went to the local guy in town and I was like, oh, it's Mr. Boriotti. Like, what are you doing here? He's like, I own this now. And then, I needed a summer job. So I went back the next day, and then that's how I ended up screen printing all throughout high school.
So you're screen printing, ordering shirts too?
I was, yeah. I mean, so I started out cleaning the screens, which I think everyone starts out doing, and that did that for a couple months, and then just like heat pressing vinyl on, and then actually printing and loading the shirts. And then like my last year, so I was working in the front office and doing ordering. I could actually talk to customers because they trusted me. So, that's how I kind of found out about the problem.
From cleaning screens to coding. Okay. I think your story is really, really interesting. So by now people probably know you as the DJI apparel guy. word gets around fast. MIT, genius friends, you guys are building a tool that allows you to essentially look at all the different distributors on one website, purchase from there. It goes to all the carts, buys it for you. Super, super cool. We are all so confused why the three of you would go to MIT, then get accepted into Y Combinator, which is like one of the largest tech accelerators, and then decide we want to build a tool for the screen printing industry.
It's a good question. I think part of it is my experience helped. Like, we felt like we had kind of a leg up over anyone in the tech world that would try to solve this problem, just being more familiar with it. But also, you know, we wanted to start a company together, like I think a lot of college friends do, and we were looking for a problem to solve. And I was telling them, like, well, I know that when I was working as a printer, this sucked. And obviously the first question that we had is like, is this market even big enough to support like a big and growing company? Turns out it's huge. Like, Bruce has started a really successful company. Steven started a super successful company in this industry, and it's massive. And so as we kind of pulled on the thread, we were like, okay, if we can actually solve this problem, it's big enough where we could have a successful company. And so that's kind of all we did to fact check before we quit our jobs and started working on this.
That was the fact checking I did. There, I was like, I'm printing. I know there's a Ed Weisskamp down the street in Champaign. He's printing. And there was like one other small guy. So I think there's a market here.
Ian, can you talk a little? Most people don't quit their career. You worked at Tesla before this, right?
Yeah, I was an intern there for a year. And then I had a return offer that I declined.
Okay, so you go to like one of the most prestigious schools in the world. And then you're interning at Tesla for a year. Don't most people like build as they're, before they like drop everything and build, they like actually try to build it first? Like, you're only in your 20s. You're not supposed to have these type of crises this young. Can you talk about that journey for a second? Because I think that's really interesting. Most people who start screen printing, you know, they get into it, they do it on the side, they do it in their garage, they have another income, and then eventually it takes over and they start to do it. You guys decided to drop everything and start doing this.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of always knew that I wanted to start a company. And I had, you know, a lot of friends who, they come out of MIT, they get like a nice high paying job, like six figures right out of college, which is amazing. And talking to them, they were all pretty unfulfilled, I think, in their careers. And they were like, yeah, I don't know what's next. Like, I wish I could try something else, but I'm really stuck in this cushy job. And I kind of saw, you know, the next 10 years of my life, if I just went down the corporate route, like trying to get one promotion, the next promotion, and I was like, all right, I just got to do this now, do it all at once. And that's kind of going to be the journey I'm on. Daniel was in the same boat, and then Grant took a little more convincing. I think he worked at his job for like a month and a half before we got him to quit and go full time on this.
I'm just reading the about story as well. Can you walk through, I think your team is using Steven DJI apparel. Can you explain just a little bit more about how you're using it as well? Because I don't know if everybody's heard of this just yet. But it's DJIapparel.com is the website that we're talking about. That's kind of made some positive noise in the space, helping people save a lot of time.
You guys purposely have a lame logo, right? Because you're so smart. You don't want to take any.
We've found that we're a very product heavy team compared to most of the people in the industry. And we lack a lot of experience in marketing and branding. So hopefully we can find someone to help us with that as time goes on.
The product is certainly selling itself. So I don't know how we got connected, Ian. I have no idea. Maybe Matt Marcotte, always Matt Marcotte. Yeah. But you go on DJI Apparel, you make an account, you then log into your big three accounts, SNS, Sanmar, Alpha Broder. From there, you can on one page see all your pricing, and then you can see all your inventory. So every day when we're purchasing, say we're, you know, on Printavo, we pull up an invoice and we need to get, you know, Gildan 5000s, we can see where to buy them the cheapest. And then we can see if we need to like sub out sizes, you can quickly toggle between distributors and different locations, and you can almost add three carts at once. When you click checkout, it can either check out through DJI Apparel, correct, or it'll add it to the carts on your SNS account. You can go on there and check out, right? And it's currently free.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And so I guess kind of like Steven mentioned, so when you go to DGI, you connect your own account to it. So the pricing that comes in will be like your custom pricing tier that your rep got you or you negotiated for, your buying group gets you. So that way you're making a decision off like your actual price, not just like some catalog price. And then like Steven mentioned, when you're building your cart on DGI, because you've connected your actual account, it stays synced up. So if you like add stuff to your cart in DGI or remove it, if you go back over to the vendor's website, it'll be synced up real time.
The irony of all this is you pick the most like rebellious industry to try and disrupt. Like we are all going to just like, you know, I saw on the Facebook forums right away, people are like, you know, what's the catch? Why am I doing this? What are they taking from me?
People are sketched out because it's free. So yeah, they're sketched out.
The logo sucks. Like all of these different things, right? Like there are these three college dropouts from MIT, or not college dropouts, MIT guys. Like that's what the whole industry is kind of thinking right now.
Is it's like a scam almost they're worried about?
I mean, you guys comments that I saw were like, I don't get it. Like how is it free or how does that work? And you know, what's the con, I think was the question people were.
Yeah. And we've started to get that a little bit less as time goes on. And we went through a similar process. I think we talked to Bruce really early on about like pricing with Printavo in like the very, very early days. Not current pricing with Printavo, but at the very beginning. And we went through a similar process where we went to like some shops and we're like, look at this cool thing. It's going to save you time. Would you give us $30 a month for it? And they were like, I think I'll just stick to what I'm doing. And we were like, okay, if it's free, would you use it? And they were like, yeah, why not? I'll sign up. And we were like, okay, there's obviously not a room to charge these or a lot of room to charge shops to use this. So we got to make it free and find a different business model. Which is kind of what we've done so far. And now some new suppliers, because we have a lot of people on the site, are starting to pay just like a flat monthly fee to list on the website. And then we're opening up some like a little bit of advertising space on there. So we can't quite pay our rent yet, but we're getting closer. Hopefully in the next few months we can get over that threshold.
I want to ask you some questions about Y Combinator and why you think this way. So maybe Bruce, could you give a little background on YC and talk a little bit about what it, because I think a lot of people, like when I tell people in the industry, like they're YC guys, like they're like, huh? You know, Bruce, can you talk about YC, these accelerators, you know, things like that, and give some background? Because I want to get into some MVP stuff.
Y Combinator was either started or helped start by a guy named Paul Graham, who was a pretty prolific co-founder as well. And he did very well. He started this, what's called an incubator, which essentially is like a program, like a summer camp in a way, but it's a business summer camp. And, you know, the participants are not playing with finger paint and fishing. They're more like working their businesses and connecting with different mentors and leaders. And it's, I don't know how many months it is, but it's, you know, what is it, like 3-4 months Ian?
Three and a half months.
And they'll provide a little seed investment. I think it used to be $100,000. Maybe now it's up to 500K, something like that. But it's the premier, you know, the incubator in the world, really. It's the place to be, because especially at the end, they have a big demo day and, you know, you're able to pitch to a lot of investors to continue raising money and working on this vision. More importantly, though, a lot of successful companies have gone through Y Combinator. Airbnb, Stripe, Instacart, DoorDash, you know, Reddit, Gusto, if you use for HR. I mean, these are some of the big companies that have gone through this program and wanted to be a part of this program. Not only that, they have some really good business essays. If you go to Paul Graham's, you know, website, he writes a lot, he tweets a lot, and he's got some just very valuable business advice and tips. So I think it's interesting, because you get so much experience. Like imagine if there was the business boot camp, right, for a shop owner to go through 4 months and you come out and you just wasted 3 years less time. And that's essentially what they're doing for tech companies. Hopefully someone can start that. I think that's a great idea separately. And I'm curious, though, what were the takeaways for you guys? Like, how did it help going into it from your company and then leaving it? Because I do think this applies to other shops.
You're still in it, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So we have demo day tomorrow, which is like the big grand finale. You can like kind of pitch your updates and see if the companies want to raise money, they can get investors on board and stuff. So like one more week or so before like the final postmortem is done.
So what was the transformation of it? Like, what are the different things, the top couple things that you've learned or pulled away as a new owner of this business, going through this program?
Yeah, I think one big one is just how much you need to value, you know, solving a customer's problem or a user's problem. There were a lot of times where they encourage you to like just do stuff that doesn't scale. So we would have someone, you know, something breaks on the site and someone lets us know and we're like, okay, like I'm going to go in and I'm going to check and see where this inventory is and I'm going to send you an email to tell you where you should buy these shirts from to fulfill your customer's order. And like, that doesn't scale at all. But at the end of the day, our job is to make sure you get the right shirts from the right vendor at the best price. So just kind of that mentality of like, be really scrappy, make sure you're solving the problem. The other one is just like, you know, when I think I first met Steven, it was a day before the DTF Expo in Phoenix. And he like texted me and I heard like Matt Marcotte was going, Steven was going to be there. A couple other people that I'd kind of heard buzz about in the industry was going to be there. And I was talking to the mentors and I was like, yeah, it'd be really cool to go to this thing. And they were like, it's, you know, $500 for round trip flights. Like, just go right now, like figure it out from there. And so I think that kind of that mentality of just like, you know, you're young, you have time, you can kind of use up all your energy trying to get this off the ground and just like solve the problem and do whatever it takes and learn as you go. Just kind of seeing it firsthand. It's one thing to kind of hear stories about it, but then just having to do it, I think gives us like a little bit of like muscle memory for being scrappy, staying lean, trying to solve customer problems. And that's some of the biggest stuff we've taken away from it. And then the other thing is just like being with the other companies. We share knowledge a lot. So people tell us like how they found users. Someone's like, oh, Facebook groups are really helpful. Oh, we went to like this conference that was really good. We paid an influencer to market it. So we just kind of pick up little tips and tricks from like the other companies as well. They help each other out a lot.
There's you can go to ycombinator.com. There's also YC talks on YouTube that are some like famous talks. Actually, Walker Williams from Teespring was in Y Combinator and he gives a pretty cool talk. But some of the things they say is launch now, build something people want, do things that don't scale, find 10 to 100 customers who love your product, write code, talk to users. Growth is the result of a great product, not the precursor. Avoid conferences unless they're the best way to get customers. Pre-product market fit. Do things that don't scale. Startups can only solve one problem well at a time. Founder relationships matter more than you think. Ignore your competitors. They're more likely to die of suicide than murder. Most companies don't die because they run out of money. Don't be a jerk. Get sleep and exercise. Take care of yourselves. Sometimes you need to fire customers. They might be killing you. There's some like golden nuggets.
That's on YC.com or something?
Yeah, it's. I'll send it to you, Bruce. Mm. But like, what's funny is when I met you, I'm like, dude, you can charge for this right away. And you're like, no, I'm good. I'm like, how are you going to make money? He's like, I'm not worried about it. Right? And so you started giving us the YC juice, like the Kool-Aid. I was like, ooh, you've been drinking the YC Kool-Aid. You've been listening to the talks. Why are you, you know, and why are companies like this not worried about pricing, not worried about brand, not worried about how they're going to make money? Like, why is that the ultimate focus that they teach you in these accelerators? Like, don't worry about profitability right now, right? Why is that? Why do you think that's what they preach? Because it's different from what, you know, some other companies might say, like some bootstrap companies.
Yeah, I think for one, like we did get some investment money. So like Bruce said, we got $500,000 when we get into Y Combinator, and that's for 7% for like $125K. And then if we fundraise or sell the company again, then the $375 that's left will convert at that valuation essentially. So that gives us some freedom to not worry about making money right away. And I think the other reason, though, that they really stress that it's okay to not make money immediately is because we're doing something new. That's kind of what's inherent in like a startup. If we were, you know, just going to be a competitor to someone that's existing, we can kind of look at their pricing model and just kind of beat them by a dollar per, you know, unit or widget or whatever. But because it's something new, they encourage you to just really, really focus on the value add early on, understanding, you know, how much value you're bringing, try things out. Like we may push really, really hard to make $100 a month per shop for the first month on it. And then we realize it's not going to work and then pivot right away. And then that just slowed us down from like understanding users, getting people to using it, seeing where the real value is. So I think because of the novelty of a lot of the startup ideas that come out of YC, the focus is much more on how much value are you creating? How much are people like, you know, recurringly using your product and sharing with other users, more so than can you get to $1,000 in revenue? Can you get to $5,000 monthly dollar or dollars in monthly revenue? Like go after something bigger and novel. So that's kind of wise. One, we have the freedom with the funding we got, and two, you just don't really know exactly what this is and how to monetize it yet. So they tell us not to worry about it till a little bit further down the road.
Do you think that's why? So like what's the success rate of companies that go into YC? So like, how many companies per cohort, you know, like how many companies are in your cohort? You have to apply to get in. It's very tough. I've applied, but I'm not really solving anything crazy. Just selling t-shirts. How many companies apply, do you think? Like what's the...
So we have, I think, 260 in this current batch. And I think the acceptance rate was just a little over 1%. So you could say about 20,000 applied for this batch. And it's, I think most of them, they kind of sift through really quickly and they don't get out of the paper application round. And then it's just a 10-minute interview with a couple of group partners. And then you get the decision later that week, whether you're in or out. And that's all they have to go on, which is pretty crazy.
And then you got to pack up and move to San Francisco.
Yep. Yeah. And we drove out from New York, which was a fun little adventure.
I think I also applied way back when, like 2012. I was trying to find the video really quick, but could not find it. So talk to us about, it sounds like your co-founders are tech folks and they're the ones building the application. You're, you know, doing everything else, sales, marketing, and support, all this stuff. I think a lot of people want to build applications. You know, Steven's dove into it. He's got a small engineering team as well, but it's definitely daunting. And I do think there's this thinking of, you know, oh, we'll just build it and it's kind of done. But I personally always tell people, hey, look, I think it's kind of like an iceberg where you only see the top 15, 20% of a problem that you're going to start coding on. And the last maybe 80% is really where a lot of the cost and time frame is going to come from. And not only that, but also the maintenance. Like it's not just a one-time build generally. It's like continual upkeep or new functionality you want on it or so on. For you guys, how long to get that version out to when you guys released? What was that process like? I've worked with the catalogs of some of the vendors you've worked with, and the data coming from them is not the greatest either.
Yeah, we, so I guess I'll preface by saying that like, Grant is the real deal. Like he could probably get a job at any software company, in pretty much any backend developer role. So that helped us a lot, where he's just really good at keeping the data flowing smoothly. And then Daniel, was a full stack developer at like a AI health tech startup, and his team was responsible for like 90% of the revenue. So he was just used to like diving in, fix it really quick, understand the entire stack, like, you know, kind of get fixes in as fast as possible. So I think that mentality helped with them a lot. In terms of getting to MVP, it was really, really rough.
Hey, what's MVP? Walk us back for a sec. What's MVP mean?
Yeah, minimum viable product. And there's kind of some misconceptions around it. And they talk a lot about this in YC is, you know, it's like the crappiest, junkiest thing that you can ship out there, because when you have people actually using your product, then you learn a lot more than if you had just scoped like this giant thing and spent a year building it. And then you had gone a year in the wrong direction. Like you can iterate much more quickly. The idea is that it like it minimizes risk essentially because you're not going so far in the wrong direction if you do pick the wrong one. And it's not necessarily that it's not good. You need to just pick one thing and do that better than anything else out there. So in our case, when we launched the MVP, we went out to a few shops and all they could do is connect the accounts for, I think it was just like Alpha and Sanmar at the time. And there were no catalog images. There were no color swatches. You had to like pick the word red and the word green. So there was no like colors or anything on there. And then after you picked a color, it would take like 10 seconds for those two prices to load. So you probably could have just gone to the other websites and searched. No fuzzy search. So if you had to know exactly the style number you were looking for, it was really, really rough, but we felt that those two prices coming in at once was something that was better than anyone else was doing. And that's kind of when we decided, all right, let's put this out there and start getting feedback on it.
How long did you have to build to get that, like, you know, that first version of it?
That was about 2 months. And that was, you know, we kind of built it with like my old boss's account. And then we use like Material UI, which is like Google's UI library. And you'll probably see a lot of components still on our site that are from that library. So we can just kind of drag and drop stuff in. We didn't have inventory. We didn't have like cart management or anything. So it was really, really lean. It was just like give them a simple UI and pull in the two prices. And that took us about 8 weeks.
Wow. And then once you start getting traction, you're like, okay, let's build in this direction, right?
Yeah. And honestly, there was a lot of very quick iterations at that point because it was so obvious. Like we would go into a shop, have someone make their account, and then they would get confused when they like first tried to connect a vendor. And we're like, okay, we need to add more verbiage here and make this more clear. And then they would... You know, we're like, okay, open up the inventory table. And they're like, I don't see a button for that. And we're like, okay, this can't just be a little arrow. This needs to say see inventory. So we got a lot of feedback really quickly. I'm sure Bruce went through a lot of the same stuff early on where he'd watch a user try to use Printavo. And he's like, okay, what do you think this button's going to do? And they're like, I have no idea. And he's like, okay, I got to make that more obvious. So it was a lot of like really simple user like product feedback stuff early on that we could iterate on.
I would love if anyone from SNS or Sanmar or Alpha Murder is listening to, please, we are begging to create a very easy to use interface. I think just the industry as a whole, like if anybody who's, you know, distributors, manufacturers, press manufacturer, anything like that, just make a very simple API. It doesn't need to be complicated, but very simple. I think everybody would be surprised how many shops would start building cool integrations and self-solve different things. I think there's still a thought of, they're not going to really do. I think we'd be surprised. There's already a ton of people poking around and solving their own problems, and you can hire folks on Upwork or, you know, a local engineer maybe you grew up with or whatever it is. But that's me pleading.
Can we talk about that for a second? So I'm just going to say the elephant in the room. This does not help SNS, Sanmar, and Alpha Broker.
Yeah, but it also may not hurt them because really it's the user needs to get to the best price.
Are you saying that, Steven, because they could see a cheaper product easily?
It's because it lowers switching costs essentially between the different ones if they see a better option. Right, Steven?
Yeah, I mean, I buy everything from SNS, and now Mila's like, oh, I have that cheaper at Sanmar. And so I email my SNS rep and say, hey, just so you know this, I'm getting this cheaper over here. And they're like, okay, I'll make that price change for you. Thanks. You know, without, and that doesn't help them, right? It just doesn't. The fact that, you know, you can switch between the two, that switching cost, if you will, is now almost negligent. Like, you know, so are you worried about that at all?
So the way we've set it up, and we were very careful about this, is all of the data is siloed per user. So you make an account on DGI and then you connect your own accounts to DGI. So we are kind of like you mentioned, where you saw like a price discrepancy. You could have gone to the individual websites and found that information yourself as well. So we're not showing anyone anything new. Like I think, you know, the distributors were kind of already aware that they compete with each other, and we made it a little bit easier for people to find the best choice more quickly. But also, like in your case, they may win more business. So you mentioned like Sanmar was cheaper on one. Now they got more business that way. SNS may be cheaper the next day. They got more business that way. So,
really, I mean, it's kind of focused on it's what Kayak does. It's what Kayak does with hotels.
Yeah. And it's like Kayak charges the suppliers like a referral fee on all the volume. And like for us, it's just free. We don't ask for anything. We just made something that makes their own customers happier. So I don't see a huge downside.
I mean, this is the tech version of a buying group. You know, you join Sports Inc. or, you know, one of these large buying groups, they have purchasing power. And they can go to different brands and say, hey, we will send X volume. All of our businesses do, you know, $1 billion a year in revenue. We can send you Y dollars in purchasing power. And so we need Z price from you, you know, not the market price. We want something better. It makes me wonder, could, you know, does DGI head in that direction? You know, are you part of the DGI purchasing group? And you could send people, you could send volume.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think we, at this point, we don't want to move in that direction. It just doesn't seem that exciting. Like buying groups already exist. And the other thing is like, I think the distributors would really not like us then if we were helping people get better prices on the same stuff they're already buying. Our goal is to just make sure the shop owner or the purchasing person gets to the right choice from their existing options as quickly as possible. And then kind of looking how to monetize from there. So
your first priority is helping the shop. That is, they are at this like Campus Inc. The athlete always comes first. For you guys, it's the customer, you know, the shop owner comes first. That kind of trumps all.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if a lot of people are purchasing on the website, then, you know, that opens up opportunities for like advertisements or sponsored listings or ways to make money. But if people don't really like buying on DGI because we've done something wrong, then there isn't really an opportunity to monetize. But also at the end of the day, like I think these shops get squeezed a lot of times. Like we saw it over the pandemic where it was difficult to turn a profit for a while. If someone changes prices, they're really sensitive. You get a lot of customers that come into the shop and they're like, hey, you know, I found this price on, you know, some custom ink knockoff. Can you match it? Like these shops get squeezed a lot. And so I think if we can do something that empowers them a little bit and helps them, there's a chance that it like becomes really popular and people really like it. So that's kind of the direction we're going in. It's all about the shops though.
Wait, yeah. Steven, what do you think then? What do you think the distributors are? Is it okay? You know, obviously it's still early, right? So I'm sure they're not going to see an effect, but let's fast forward 3 years and fact that this is a very helpful tool. Now what?
I think if you're like the big three, right? Like you're looking at it and you're like, okay, this is a small threat because now my competitors are getting closer to me. They are 1 inch closer to me than they were before, right? Or there's more visibility. But I think what it also does is it allows, I imagine like today you've got Alpha, SNS, Sanmar, Carolina Made, Augusta, ACC, and Print Gear. Mm-hmm. Could other distributors be on this? Like AS Color or Lane 7 or, you know, the ones that I have to go on and shop with like one at a time. Are they going to be coming on?
Yeah. And AS Color will actually be added on in the next 2 weeks. So we signed them up and they're just paying like a small monthly fee to be on. And then Staten out of Dallas and Memphis will be on as well. So, I mean, we're slowly like adding a few more one at a time. And it's really just based on where the shops give us a lot of demand to add new vendors.
Man, you got some great connections. I wonder who you made them. Holy cow, AS Color that quick. Jeez.
Wait, but Steven, what do you think is an Alpha Broder saying, shit, you know, this kind of sucks that people are doing this, but then again, they can price shop as they do. Currently, it's just there's a lot less friction here, you know? So like which side of the boat are they pushing on? Do they have to lean on more customer service based driven value because the price is essentially commoditized or what?
I think what's interesting is, you know, every day, like I just look at Myla, who buys for us every single day. She goes SNS, Sanmar, Alpha Broder. She's got, you know, her screens open. 80% of the time we're buying from SNS, right? Sanmar is a backup. Alpha is a third backup. Sorry, Alpha Broder. She's more, I bet you we've spent more at Alpha now because she's more conscious of Alpha's prices and Alpha's products, right? And so if we were a shop that didn't buy a lot from there, I bet you we'd buy a little bit more. On the flip side, you know, those top ones that we put all our business in, they might need to make sure that they're defensible against the other ones. You see what I'm saying? So like, I think it gives the big three the opportunity to pick off others. But it also could kind of equalize the playing field a little bit.
I wonder if it has to, it's just like the airline industry. You talk about being Expedia for this space. Well, what keeps you married to United, Steven? Your credit card, your status, your lounges, your like the all the extras of how they treat you versus just the flight. Like the actual process of getting to somewhere is like, anybody can get me there. But all the additions are what keeps you married to United.
And that's the same thing with SNS. They take just amazing care of us. I you know, texted Tim Shannon on Sunday night to get a rush order of, you know, $10,000 order, pick up Monday morning, and he pushed it through, right? And he's like an executive at the company, right? They fly us out for everything. They take care of our students. They do promotions. They do this, they do that. They take really, really good care of us. So I think it strengthens them. I think for the bigger shops, those distributors probably don't like it as much. For the smaller ones, I think it's good for them because, you know, it's more eyeballs and more visibility that might not exist. I don't know. I think it's early. What do you think, Bruce?
I mean, I think there's got to be extra perks over time. And maybe it is a credit card. Like, can you imagine if SNS releases a credit card and it's like 2% back, 3% back on spend? Because I believe that, you know, the Visas of the world or whatever just want the volume and they are the one that gives the benefit anyway. It's not like SNS.
Oh, when you spend enough, you get a rebate. It's a large check that exists. Rebates exist already. You need to.
But they're paying for the rebate. You know, if they could pass that rebate on, you know, and increase their margin and Visa pays for it.
Sure.
Or Chase pays for it.
I think the other cool thing for a small shop is you can see your minimums. So you can be like, ooh, I've hit $200. I get free freight now. Mm-hmm. That's kind of cool. So you can see it as like three thermometers, basically, which I think is neat for the shop that's toggling between.
But you kind of said it yourself. You're going to Alpha, though, a little bit more. Like, because
I need to actually check. I think what Myla, the feedback she gave me is like, I can see Alpha's prices a little bit easier now, and I'll probably push to them if something's cheaper just off the cuff. Like, if she's saving, you know, if she's saving $50 to $100 a day just by making smarter buying choices, yeah, she can buy from Alpha. And then, you know, when I do my price revisions with my SNS rep, I'll just bring it to their attention.
Yeah. And I think on that note, it's kind of worth mentioning. So we were kind of curious, like, are people just only buying the cheapest option every single time? And they buy the cheapest option about 60% of the time. So 40%, they're not buying the cheapest option on DGI. And so there's other factors that go into it, whether it be, you know, shipping time. Like, I think Steven mentioned to me, he'll pay a premium if he knows he can get the shirts in his shop much faster, like the next morning or something. And then also just like availability. The color selection option, if you stock like a few more colors, if you have certain styles or deals with brands. So it may be more of a push to, you know, lock down exclusive deals with a few brands here and there. So that way they can kind of differentiate from the other distributors. And then also like for the smaller shops, what's in their cart. A lot of times if there's something that's a little bit cheaper, but you're only getting 10 t-shirts, you'll add the more expensive one to the cart that already has enough items to get you over the free shipping threshold. So it's not just like a price comparison tool. We're bringing in a lot more to make the decision for what is the best purchase easier, which is kind of something that Daniel, who's focused on like the product side, has done a really good job of, where it's not just about price. And we found that out really early on because we asked if someone wanted it to be like automatically added to their cart. And they're like, well, no, I wouldn't get that because of X, Y, and Z reasons. And we're like, okay, we got to do this. Give them the agency to kind of make the right choice. So. Interesting point.
Once we met, I started, you know, Bruce stopped listening to my ideas years ago. And so you just, you know, when I give Bruce an idea, it just goes into the void. But Ian, you're fresh meat. And I was like, ooh, I'm going to hit this guy up with ideas. Auto purchasing from Shopify, connecting Printavo to it, auto add to cart, right? Connect this to QuickBooks, right? I'd love to see a breakout of my best products that I buy. All of these different things. And, you know, your answer to all of them was, yeah, we could probably build that. That's not the answer I was looking for. I was looking for you to go back home, build it, and tell me you built it. That would have been a little nicer. How are you guys thinking about what to build next? You know, because we're a needy bunch, but you also are trying to stay true to what you're trying to solve.
Yeah. So one would be like new suppliers is a really easy answer. And the first, like, you know, 4 months of trying to like figure out how to add new suppliers and everything that goes into it was a huge pain. And now we have a little bit more of a system for doing that, so we can do it more quickly. And I think there's like a clear value add every time we add a new supplier. That's one less website that you have to worry about and keep track of in your head. So that's like the obvious next step. I think somewhere in there, we want to do something to help with receiving. That seems to be like the next step. Like, we don't really want to go into like shop workflow management and stuff. I just don't know enough about how other shops work. But some way to help you kind of
right
know.
Answer.
Yeah. Honestly, you guys would crush us. We just don't know enough about that industry. Yeah. The Printavo application has to be so
it's
flexible
doable,
for all these different shops. Yeah.
We'll just build it ourselves.
Yeah.
fuck Bruce. We'll just build it ourselves. Shoot a bumper sticker that says that. Go ahead, Ian.
Or a t-shirt. But yeah, so because you're shopping and you can kind of input like what customer invoices each thing you're shopping for is, maybe it's like imported from the Printavo API while you're shopping or something, or like a CSV. And then as you create the orders and send them off to your supplier, when those orders come in your door, you can say, okay, the PO from this supplier is in. That means invoices 1, 2, and 3 are in the shop, and we can actually like move those to the next stage in the production schedule. I think that's kind of seems like the next step in the purchasing workflow that we want to like start touching on. But it's really flexible. We found out that we can't plan more than like 2 or 3 weeks in advance, because then new information comes to light and we have to like pivot and do something new again. So we just kind of roadmap about 20 days ahead and then go from there.
That's interesting. We were just talking about, was it 20, the guys from Rework, the 27 Signal, what's the Signal one, Bruce?
27 Signals? Rework that.
Rework. And they talk about only planning, you know, 4 to 6 weeks in advance. So you're not building auto ordering for, okay. Maybe, please. I think what's really cool, and the light bulbs that keep going off, and as I've talked to other people in the industry, and Andy and Dylan, you know, you obviously know, and they're like, man, this could just save our people so much time. And it could literally save employees, like, not to say we want to cut employees, but, you know, if you solve these problems, you could take an employee that worked 40 hours a week down to 20 hours a week, or you could offshore purchasing or things like that. Purchasing is such an important part of our business that we kind of don't realize the manual work that we do every day, but it's so, 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 so critical. I'm curious, as you've met shops, you went to DTF Expo in Phoenix, which is like an interesting crowd, new crowd. And then you went to Atlantic City. How has your, you know, kind of baptism by fire in the industry, meeting people, what have you learned? Yeah. What have you learned about the industry? Like, when you go back to your buddies or your co-founders and you're like, man, this industry is weird. Or what do you tell them? What do you tell your cohort about our industry that's been interesting to you?
Yeah. I think one thing to note is the skepticism around new tech. Obviously, I think there's a lot of people that have been doing this the same way for a really long time. And they're kind of worried that something's going to sweep in and like uproot this business that they've built to build for years and years. And so if what they're doing is working, then there's some risk to switching to something new. So that's like one hurdle to overcome. And then I think the one that's actually more relevant is the way that a lot of business owners and printers value their time. they seem to be comfortable hunting around for deals, even if it's only like a couple cents cheaper here and there, because you feel like you're working on your business. It's helping out your bottom line. When at the end of the day, if you had just picked the quickest option right away, like if, you know, you save $20, but you spent an hour looking for it. And if you value your time at $50 an hour, is actually a bad use of time. So we needed a way to, help people improve their bottom line, but also do it very quickly and then communicate and articulate that well, is kind of one of the interesting things that we picked up, is they just kind of, the value prop wasn't there right off the bat. And I think that's part of why people weren't willing to pay for it initially as well, is they were like, I can just do this on myself, even though they would spend an extra hour every day purchasing, which would be, $100 a week or something at their time.
Why do you think that is in our industry? Why do you think those are very, very accurate descriptions of shop owners? Why do you think that? And Bruce, big coupon clipper. why do you think that is? Is that human nature or our industry?
That's a good question. I think it's human nature to a certain extent. Like, I think a lot of small business owners will do things like that, where it doesn't necessarily scale and maximize, or optimize their business. It's human nature to kind of look for a deal and feel like you're doing something productive. Like, you'll see those, maybe not Bruce is this extreme, but the people who like have giant scrapbooks of coupons and they go to Walmart and they save $20, but they spent like 4 hours that week putting everything together. I think there's something in human nature that does that. And so we needed a way for you to get all your coupons, and then as you're checking out, the coupons just automatically get applied to your checkout at Walmart, and kind of convey that really simply. But yeah, I think it's just the mentality of a lot of small business owners. You kind of look at your bottom line. You're willing to work yourself to the bone in order to save a few bucks here and there. And that's something that we need to respect, because that hard work is how they built a lot of their businesses. And we're cognizant of that, but also something that hopefully we can help make better, and they can spend more time on other parts of their business if we do this correctly.
Bruce, do you remember early trade show days? People would walk by the booth and be like, "That's on the cloud." No, I don't do the cloud.
Yeah. I was like, damn, I'd have to convince them to use the internet too. Like, this is not going to go so well.
Take that back to YC. My customer base doesn't believe in the cloud.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing this, Ian. I appreciate you sharing behind the scenes and where you guys are going.
Ian, who's your favorite person in the industry you've met so far besides me? Because you've met a bunch of cool cats lately in the last two shows that you've gone to. Who are some noteworthy folks that you've met? See if you remember your customer base.
My customer base. He is a customer, but also an evangelist for DGI. It would be Matt Marcotte.
No.
Time is that out. A cop out?
Yeah, that's a cop out. No, we need we need some good ones. Like, who was at the slot machines or rolling through Atlantic City at wee hours of the night that you hung out with? Those, we need the like.
The slot machines late at night. I don't want to call
also
anyone
Matt
out here.
Marcotte.
Yeah, also Matt.
It's probably Nick Wood. Have you met Nick Wood yet?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
You need to go on a Nick Wood retreat. No, this is cool. Ian, it's quite obvious, like, you and your co-founders are obviously brilliant. And I think what you're building is really cool. I think the way that you're approaching it is fascinating. I think we're excited for you. I think Bruce and I are like, whew, there's you're going to have to convince a lot of people to do things. But I think what's most fascinating and inspiring is how many customers you've acquired in such a short amount of time, which means you're building something that the industry definitely needs. So kudos to you guys. And I'm excited to see where this goes from here. So hopefully we're back next year talking about this.
Yeah, definitely. And awesome. Thank you guys so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Pronouncers. We appreciate you guys joining us for another episode of Pentabo Pronouncers podcast. You can check Ian's company on DGIapparel.com. All right. Appreciate you guys joining on. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. to subscribe, hit the bell for notifications, and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.